My name is Keshava Swami. I've been a monk for quite some years at the Bhaktivedanta Manor, temple and monastery we have in Watford, not far away from, well, quite far away from here actually, 1.5 hours. But we're very happy to be here. How many of you are here for the a first time Hare Krishna program? Is it a first time for you? Okay, wonderful. Thank you for being open-minded and coming. Appreciated. This is Godruma. He's a veteran spiritualist. He's been practicing Krishna consciousness and these teachings for over 4 decades. So he's my therapist as well. So, and then we're here with other devotees from Bhaktivedanta Manor, and then obviously many devotees from Crawley, familiar faces. And it's really a nice evening. We're here, the sun is out, it's a beautiful setting. I guess we'll do a little bit of singing. We'll maybe discuss some philosophy. If you have anything on your mind, in your heart, that you would like to ask or discuss, then I'll ask you, you can just throw it out and we'll have a discussion on that. And then we'll have some good food as well. Is that okay? Excited? Okay, good. All right, so we'll do a little bit of singing. And then take it. Prabhupada ki jai. Yeah, so great to be here. So I asked Arti upstairs whether there was anything specific she wanted to discuss, and she said, let's just go with Krishna's plan. So I'm going to go with Krishna's plan today and see where we kind of have a discussion. Is there anything here, any topics or anything on anyone's mind or any questions you may have? It could be anything about life, about philosophy, about happiness, about yourself, about God. Okay, we have some hands here. Yeah, go on.
Thank you so much. It's something that I was thinking about today. It's about the Prabhupada says is that Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple, complicated for the complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is that, you know, he never said which one was better, and he never said anyone is good or anyone is bad. So how can you categorize that in sort of terms of how we keep things simple, but at the same time do delve deep at the same time?
Okay, yes. Yeah, this is beautiful, actually, that... I'm going to keep that in mind. Let me see what else others say, and then I'm going to weave it in. Is there anything else anyone had a question on or is interested in discussing or anything, any points?
So, whenever we do something in our life, right, so in our day-to-day life, how do we know that it is Krishna's wish that what we are... How do we know that... We generally say that it's Krishna's wish. Whatever happens is Krishna's wish. So we always kind of give responsibility to Krishna for everything. But
how do we know that what we're doing is going with the plan of the divine, or whether it's our own mind? That's a very good topic as well. Okay, guys, got some good topics here. Okay, I'm not going to ask for any more, otherwise it's going to get too complicated to try and answer everything. Do you have a Gita here?
Yes.
Is it possible to get it?
Yeah.
Just going to the first point here, spiritual knowledge and material knowledge is actually quite different. Material knowledge tends to be like this, like a graph going up like this, where over time you learn more and more, you pack in more and more information, you can cite more and more things. So material knowledge tends to go in a line up. Spiritual knowledge, however, is very different. Spiritual learning is like a spiral. And in a spiral, you're going round and round, and really speaking, you're talking about the same things year after year. Okay, there may be more details, there may be more perspectives, but basically you're going round and round when you study spiritual knowledge. But the idea is by studying the same things, the same books, the same body of knowledge, what happens is you begin to hone in on the essence of that knowledge, which is actually very, very simple. And Srila Prabhupada, he once said that Krishna consciousness is so simple, you may just miss it. It's so simple, you may just miss it. One of my teachers, he said something which really for me summed up Krishna consciousness, summed up the Bhagavad Gita, summed up spiritual life. When he said in one sutra, don't try to be happy, try to serve. And for me, that kind of summed up spiritual life, don't try to be happy, try to serve. Because it's that selflessness, it's that complete dedication to giving, which is the basis of a real spiritual life. That's the basis of real relationship. That's the basis of real love. The depth of any relationship in this world is proportionate to how much selflessness there is in that love, in that relationship. Therefore, we see when that selflessness is arising within the heart of someone, that simplicity of selflessness, that's when the deepest experiences of spirituality come. So going deep in spirituality doesn't mean to learn more, to know more, to pack your brain with more and more, but it means to awaken and unleash and imbibe a complete selflessness in everything you do. And that's what brings you to the highest level of spiritual experience. I always remember in our locker room in the ashram, there was one devotee next to me. His name was Leo. He was from Israel and many years ago. And he used to have a quote by Srila Prabhupada on the locker. And it was Srila Prabhupada in his final days, and he had this quote on his locker. So I saw it every day, and it therefore left an impression on me. And Srila Prabhupada said, I have no other motivation. I am only planning how people can become happy. And that was the complete motivation, that was the complete mindset of Srila Prabhupada. I have no other motivation. I am only planning how people can become happy. And then you think, yeah, but what about my happiness? But the amazing formula of spirituality is that when you make others happy, your own happiness arises. When you help other people solve their problems, you know what? Your problems disappear. When you try to help other people become wise, in the process, you become wise yourself. And as you awaken the devotion or assist someone to awaken the devotion within their heart, the love within their heart, then your own love awakens. And so in a world in which there is so much selfishness, once a student, this is a samurai tale, a student came to the guru and said, what's the difference between the spiritual world and the material world? And so the guru kind of, with a stroke of his hand, he gave him a vision of the material world, the hellish world. And it was a table, and everyone was around the table, and everyone was emaciated. And when he looked closely, everyone had a hand as a spoon. So their hand was like a spoon, but it was so long. And so when they came to serve the food, everyone was like, they couldn't feed themselves because the hand of their spoon was too long. They couldn't get it into the mouth. So everyone was like suffering. And so there was this scene of hell where everyone was emaciated. They had all this food, but they couldn't eat it because... And then with another stroke of his hand, he gave him a vision of the spiritual world. And the amazing thing is, it was the same table, it was the same food, and it was the same people who had these long arms as spoons. But everyone looked perfectly happy. And as they served the food out, what happened in the spiritual world is that every person used their long spoon to serve the person opposite them. And the other one served them, and they were perfectly happy. They were perfectly satisfied, perfectly nourished. Because it wasn't about me anymore. And that's the difference between the spiritual world and the material world. That's the difference between a spiritual community and a material community. That's the difference between a spiritual relationship and a material relationship. Where is their selfishness and where is their selflessness? And so we live in the me society. It's all about me, me, me. We always think. Isn't it something happens on the news? And like our immediate thing is, how does this affect me? Isn't it? It's amazing. There could be a war on the other side of the world or something. 1,000 people are dying. And we look at it and we think, what does this mean for me? How is it going to change my life? Because we tend to just always see everything from our perspective. So when we imbibe that selflessness, they say you earn a living by what you get, but you earn a life by what you give. That's what makes a life. How much are we givers? How much are we serving? And that's the simple formula of spirituality. So when Srila Prabhupada said simple for the simple and complicated for the complicated, what it means is that in our life, when we're very calculative, when we're always thinking like, what's in it for me and how's it, you know, kind of duplicitous, and then spiritual life becomes difficult. But if we're very simple and we just think, no, how can I serve others? It works. Does it sound impractical to be selfless? It sounds perfectly okay, isn't it? But then when we go out into the world, then it's difficult to be selfless. Sometimes we feel people, if I'm selfless, people will exploit me, or people will take advantage of me, or maybe I'll miss out on something if I don't take care of myself. But as we imbibe more and more selflessness, then we find my heart becomes fulfilled when I'm selfless. And when my heart is fulfilled, I don't actually need that much in life. We tend to need all of these things, need all of these achievements and accolades, need all of this kind of acknowledgement, because our heart is not fulfilled. So selflessness fulfills the heart, and that's why it's the most beautiful life. It's the most rewarding life. And in that way, spiritual life is very simple, not so complicated, but you have to be simple. Is that okay? Something on that point. Yeah, this is the Gita.
Okay. So how do we know
we are moving with Krishna's plan? How do we know? In life we have to make so many decisions, isn't it? Every day we make so many decisions, big decisions, small decisions. What will I make for dinner? What will I wear? That's why somehow monk life is very simple, because you don't have so many decisions to make. You wear the same thing every day and the same hairstyle. You don't cook. Whatever is given to you, eat it. Actually, you know, in the world today, people suffer from decision-making fatigue because you have so many decisions to make. So do you know that some of the top CEOs in the world, what they do, I think, what's the founder of Walmart? What's his name? Walmart. Oh, I can't remember his name. Okay, anyway, you can imagine, very rich person. I can't remember his name. Someone can Google it. Anyway, what he does when he wants to make like the most important business decisions, you know what he does? He goes to like a mountainside house he has, and he takes like two pairs of clothes, and he takes like cookies and milk. And he just has cookies and milk for the whole weekend, and he just has the same pair of clothes. Because the idea is reduce the number of small decisions you have to make. Because in life, what happens, we have so many small decisions to make, like what am I going to wear, how am I going to get there, what am I going to eat, you know, how am I going to do this. That when we have to then make a big decision, we're like, oh, I'm so tired. All right, let's just do that, you know. And it's like a life decision. Who am I going to marry? Okay, we'll take that one. So sometimes it's like that. We have so many decisions to make, but we're so tired from a world in which there's so much variety. And that's why the concept of spirituality is simple living, high thinking. Actually, the concept of spirituality is you simplify your life in so many ways so that your intelligence, your headspace is free so that you can actually think about the big things in life, the big questions, the bigger purpose of it all. So Arjun, in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, he was not sure, what is Krishna's plan? What does Krishna want me to do? Have you ever been in a situation where you are in a dilemma and you don't know what to do, what decision to make? What is the providence? Is it supposed to be this or this? You know, one time a man went to an astrologer and said, I don't know, there are two ladies in my life, and I don't know which is going to be the lucky one. Can you give me some help? So then the astrologer looked in the crystal ball and he said, yeah, I've got a vision, a clear vision. He said, the first one is the one you'll marry, and the second one will be the lucky one. So that was interesting. So sometimes we don't know what to do in life. What should I do? Is it this or that? And then we have to live with that decision. Decisions are easy to make, sometimes not easy to live with. So what does Arjun do when he has to make a decision? This is text number 7 from chapter number 2. Krishna is like the best coach. In the whole of the first chapter, Arjun has all of these problems. And what does Krishna do? Krishna doesn't even speak, he just listens to him. He's just like, yeah, let it all out. Yeah, speak more. They say, listen to understand, don't listen to reply. So Krishna is just standing there in the first chapter, sitting there in the chariot, and he's just letting Arjuna express all of his confusion and doubt. And then only when Arjun comes to him and says this, does Krishna begin to give him wisdom. So what does Arjun say to Krishna? Karpanya dosho pahata svabhava prachamitvam dharma samudachetaha yachraya shaneshitam bruhitanme shishyastiham sadhimam tvam prapannam. Arjun goes to Krishna. And he's now wanting to learn from Krishna. What does he say? Now I am confused about my duty and have lost all composure because of miserly weakness. In this condition, I am asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. In the entire Bhagavad Gita, we can say this is probably the moment where Arjun makes the best decision he could. Because from this point, everything begins to work. But before this point, everything is confusion. Arjun is right next to Krishna. In the first chapter, Arjun is right next to Krishna. But even though he's right next to Krishna, he's still full of problems. He's still full of stress. He's still full of anxiety. He's still completely confused. How can you be so close to Krishna, but at the same time be so stressed and confused and in anxiety? Because he's close to Krishna, but he's not listening to Krishna. You see, many people grow up in a tradition. They go to the church, or they go to the temple, or they grow up in a family where they're close to the culture of spirituality. But that doesn't automatically mean you're going to find peace in your life. It's not enough to just be close to the culture of spirituality. You actually have to begin to absorb the wisdom and the insight and the deep teachings that God is actually giving, and then actually you can begin to solve your problems. So this is the point where Arjun isn't just close to Krishna, but this is the point where he begins to hear from Krishna. And so that's a lesson for our own life, that the first thing is, if you want to know how to move with the divine plan, first you have to be listening to the divine plan. You have to open your ears and your heart to receive the message from the divine as to what you should be doing in your life. So what do I mean by that? Does it mean one night a light will come through the window and then give you the message of what you should do? What does it actually mean to hear? This is what the whole Bhagavad Gita is about. When people have to make a decision, there's sometimes, you can say there's a few responses. Some people, when they have to make a decision, they just can't. Indecision. Ever met anyone like that? Just can't make a decision. They just don't know. It's just too confusing that they just don't do anything. And then the world, life chooses for them anyway. So that's not very good. Some people, when they have to make a decision, they're not indecisive, but they're the other extreme. They're impulsive. They just do what feels good now. But is it that what always feels good now is the best decision to make? Not always. They say, don't give up what you want most for what feels good now. So indecisiveness is not good. Impulsiveness is also not good when you have to decide your direction in life. Better than both of those is introspection. You deeply think, like, okay, if I make this decision or if I go this direction in my life, then this is what the effects are going to be. But what Arjun does here is he opens up another dimension in decision making. Indecision is not good. Better than that, or not better than that, impulsiveness is also not good. But better than both of those is when you have to decide your direction in life, think deeply, introspect. But there's something even higher than that, which is inspiration. Gain inspiration from a source that's higher than you, that has a perspective broader than you, that has an insight deeper than you. And through that inspiration, then have introspection and decide what you want to do in life. So then the next question is, where do we get the inspiration from? So basically, what Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita is that inspiration to decide your direction in life basically comes from three things. Spiritual books, divine people, and the divinity within your own heart. If you want to know what God wants you to do, then what you have to do is you have to have a deep connection with the divine wisdom that Krishna gives in these books. The second thing is you have to have a deep connection with spiritual people who are living this. And the third thing is you have to have a deep connection with Krishna, who's in your own heart, who's directing your journey. When you have those three connection points, then whenever you have to make a decision in your life or decide what you want to do or how you want to function, you will have inspiration. That doesn't mean it will always be 100% clear, but you will have a sense of a much better direction of where you need to go in life. And therefore, this is the whole process of spiritual life. To develop a relationship with these books of wisdom and with this philosophy, to develop a relationship with other spiritual people who are living it, and to ultimately realize that there is a voice of intuition within me, which is divine, which is Krishna in my heart. And if I pray to him, then he'll also inspire me within my heart to know what is the right thing to do. And when you plug into those three sources of inspiration, then you can begin to understand what direction you should take in your life. Does that help?
Yeah. Thank you.
So that's basically what Arjun does in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Krishna, I'm indecisive. I don't want to be impulsive. I'm trying to introspect. But even after all my introspection, I'm still confused. Therefore, now I come to you for inspiration. Give me another perspective. Give me an elevated vantage point from which to see my life and navigate myself out of this difficult situation. And then what does Krishna do for the next 18 chapters? 45 minutes, Krishna explains everything to Arjun. And what does Arjun say at the end? Nasto moha smriti labdhva tvat prasadat mayachuta stitosmi gata sandeha karishye vachanam tava. Arjun says, my illusion is gone. I've regained all my memory. All my doubts have disappeared. And I know what I'm meant to do. Karishye vachanam tava. I'm ready to act now. And I know what my path is in life. So that clarity will come through divine connection. Krishna, God, the divine, is not just a concept that we believe in, but Krishna is someone who you can interact with. Krishna is someone who you can feel the presence of. Krishna is someone who you can have a dynamic living relationship with. Krishna is someone who is not a distant God, but a very close God. He's involved in your life. He's alive. He's active. He's attentive. He's reciprocating. But we have to open up that relationship through the spiritual books, through the spiritual people, and through the spiritual guide within, the divinity within, the, what we call the Paramatma. And then everything will become clear, just like everything became clear for Arjun. It doesn't mean life becomes easy, but it means at least you know where you're meant to be going in life. And then you have to walk that path. Does anyone have any questions or anything based on anything I've said that you'd like to clarify? Yes.
When you're talking about serving people, you're a very learned person. That's why I respect for your knowledge answer for that. Who and when would one serve, and why?
Who and when would one serve, and why? Who, everyone, when, all the time. Why? Because you want to help them. In one sense, we don't discriminate. But we have to be practical. You know, sometimes there are times when you have to obviously take care of yourself. You know, we are doctors, but we are patients as well. So you also have to take care of yourself if you're, you know, 24 hours a day just out there serving other people, but you don't take care of yourself, then eventually you won't be able to serve anyone else. So we should have self-care, we should have self-compassion, we should have a balanced life in which we have all of our needs met. But all of that is not the goal of life. All of that will not make us happy. There are people in this world who have everything, but it's almost like there's a big vacuum in their heart. Because the only thing that will fill the vacuum in your heart is loving relationships with others, loving relationships with God. We all seek to experience love. But love means there must be relationship. And relationship is only formed if there is service. So the more people you serve, the more objects of service that you have, the more relationships you will open up. And the more relationships you open up, the more love you'll experience in your life. And that love is what will make your life meaningful. Yeah. They say some people are so poor. Some people are so poor that all they have is money. So what is the richest person is not the one who has the most, but it's the one who needs the least, because they have such deep inner fulfillment. You see, what are we doing to invest in our inner assets that the world doesn't talk about? The world is always about increasing your assets that everyone will see. But sometimes we create a life that really looks good on the outside, but doesn't feel very good on the inside. Smiling faces, crying hearts. So we have to address our real need, our real aspiration, which is to experience love. And that can only be done through service. So have self-care, you know, have a balanced life, but realize that that is a platform from which to ultimately then go and serve others. And you know, and that will create a beautiful, and sometimes, you know, people may not always even appreciate the service that you do, isn't it? Have you noticed that one? You do so much for someone, and then you think like, oh my God, they didn't even appreciate that. So, sorry, I'm just trying to put something out here. But it doesn't matter. It's not between you and them. It's between you and God. There's this poem, you can look it up. Maybe someone, Priyabhati, you can get it. Do it anyway.
There's no network. I haven't got network.
Oh, yeah, I got network. Yeah, I didn't get network either. There's no network here. That's okay. Do it anyway. This poem, apparently Mother Teresa had it written on next to her bed in her Calcutta orphanage. Anyway, someone can find it, they can find it. Got it? Yeah, so here she says, "People are often unreasonable, irrational, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people may accuse you of selfish ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you are honest and sincere, people may deceive you. Be honest and sincere anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, some people may be jealous. Be happy anyway. The good you do today will be forgotten tomorrow. Do good anyway. In the final analysis, it's between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway." So, that's the kind of life that we're aspiring for. That's a beautiful life, a life of contribution. We often, you know, when we join the temple, then one of our teachers, he used to do this guided meditation with us where we'd visualize our own funeral and we'd visualize the speech that someone gave when I died. And we'd have to write down all of the things that we'd want to be remembered for. What would that speech sound like? How would I want people to remember me? And then we'd write down that speech. And then we'd look at our lives and say, what have I done in the last week, in the last month, to become this person? And then we realize we put so much effort into so many things. But that's not what will ultimately, that's not what we want to be defined by. But that's what may get some immediate attention and acknowledgement and appreciation now. But the real thing is, if you touch hearts, if you have relationships, if you experience love, that's what people are starving for, actually. So, in the busyness of life and in all the demands that we have, we shouldn't forget that this is our highest aspiration. And so this is what Krishna is reminding us of in the Bhagavad Gita. And when we serve God, then because God is the root of all existence, when you water the root of the tree, then the whole tree becomes satisfied. When you feed the stomach, the whole body becomes energized. So there's a sense in which when we connect to divinity and when we serve divinity you know, as a, or God or Krishna as the first priority, then all of our other relationships flourish, because we see divinity in all of those relationships. Does that help? Did that address what you... Yeah. Anyone else like to ask anything or make a comment or anything out there? There may be something else you want to discuss. Is there? Everyone's very quiet.
I was asking a question upstairs that my kids now tell me that, oh, we used to worship Lord Balaji, Tirupati Balaji, now Krishna. Why Krishna? Why not Balaji? We worship Balaji but not Krishna. So there is so much of argument between you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, this is a good question.
I don't have good
yeah.
answers, so I thought I'll ask you.
No, sure. Okay, so let's take a few steps back. There's one God, naturally. But that one God appears in many, many different ways. That one God has many, many different forms and personalities. And that one God is worshipped not just within the Vedic tradition, but across the world in different religions in different ways. Our teacher Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said, when I go into a church, then I see that here is my same God being worshipped with a different name, in a different ritual, according to a different tradition, but it's my same God. So the first thing we should understand is that there's one God, but that one God appears in many, many different ways and has many, many different aspects to their personality. Just like you're one person, but different people in your life may call you different names. Your children don't call you by your first name. They don't say like, "Oh, RT, what's for dinner, RT?" No, they won't call you by. They'll call you mum, because that's their relationship with you. They know some aspect of your personality, but your partner knows maybe other aspects of your personality. So everyone has a different relationship with you. So, you know, sometimes two people can know you and their knowledge of you is sometimes very different, isn't it? You're like, RT, yeah, she's really patient. RT, patient. I'm sure you are, but you get what I mean. They know different aspects of you. So God is like that. His personality is so multifaceted. So, okay, so the point I'm making, you know the technical name for this theology? It's not polytheism. It's not even monotheism. You know what the technical name for this theology is? Polymorphic bimonotheism. That's what we follow. Polymorphic bimonotheism. What does that mean? We're monotheistic. We believe there's one God. But we're bi-monotheistic. We believe that that one God has a male aspect and a female aspect. So that's the first thing. That Krishna is never worshipped alone. Krishna is always with Radharani. Ram is never worshipped alone. Ram is always worshipped with Sita. Narayan is never worshipped alone. It's always Lakshmi Narayan. So the first thing about Vedic theology is that God is not just male. God is male and female. So that's why we're bi-monotheistic. There's one God, but he has a male and a female aspect. Now, not just that, but that one God is polymorphic. That one God then appears in this world in many, many different forms. So, here now your question is, Balaji, Venkateshwar, Mahavishnu, and then there is Krishna. So why are we worshipping Krishna and not Mahavishnu? But we're worshipping both of them. But what is their identity, you must understand. So Krishna is God at home. Krishna is God who just has a good time. Have you ever seen a picture of Krishna working? Yeah. He's always running, he's playing with a cow, he's playing his flute, he's dancing, he's on a swing. He doesn't work. Krishna just has a good time. But then when Krishna has to create these material worlds, then what does he do? He expands as Mahavishnu. So Balaji Venkateshwar is Mahavishnu. So Mahavishnu or Balaji is God at work when he's creating the world. And Krishna is God at home when he's just having a good time, isn't it? So what do our scriptures say? Siddhantatas tvabe debi Shrisha Krishna Svarupayo Rasanot Krishyate Krishna Rupame Sharasastiti. Siddhantastam Vedepi. That in identity there is no difference between Vishnu and Krishna. They are the same. Rasanot Krishyate Krishna. But when it comes to rasa, when it comes to the manifestation of God's sweetness, His personality, His charm, His beauty, His color, His character, His enchanting nature, then Krishna supersedes Vishnu. Because Krishna is the form of God in which the complete sweetness of God is coming out. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada always uses this term, the supreme personality of Godhead. Does that mean Mahavishnu doesn't have a personality? Of course he has a personality. But the supreme personality of God, in all of his sweetness, in all of his charm, in all of his charisma, is coming out in Krishna. Does all of your charisma, charm, and your heart come out while you're at work? But does all your charm and your love and what's really in your heart, does that come out when you're at home with your most intimate associate? Yes. So that is Krishna. So therefore, we are worshipping Vishnu and Krishna. And we continue to worship Vishnu, no problem. But if someone asks, why is our focus on Krishna? Because Krishna is the form of God in which the Supreme Personality is coming, and we want our minds to become captured by God, and therefore we approach God in His sweetest form. Is that okay? Yeah, shall we?
You mentioned earlier about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he says, when I see in a church, it's my own Lord that is being worshipped, but just in a different way. In our teachings, or in the Gaudiya teachings and the Vedic teachings, there's an emphasis, like you mentioned, on Krishna, and that we are trying to develop a relationship because He's the Supreme Personality. But we're also told that there are devotees in other religions that can attain bhakti.
Yeah, high levels.
So St. Francis of Assisi.
Yeah.
But are they worshipping Krishna, or are they worshipping, whatever they're told the highest being is, or whether it's an impersonal being? What is the destination for someone like that? That is worshipping with love, but they're not actually worshipping Krishna.
Yeah. This is always a difficult question to answer, because as soon as one enters into a dynamic relationship with God, then whatever tradition they may be in, then God is becoming involved in their life. God is attracted by devotion. God is attracted by love. And therefore, even sometimes in their teachings, certain things may not be mentioned, but because of the purity of their devotion and love, God may come and Himself begin to reveal things that aren't even in the teachings. There was one Christian saint who, through his practice, he came to the point of understanding that God and His name are non-different. Like, we hear that, right? That's like a major thing that we hear about. But in the Christian tradition, it's unheard of. So he wrote a whole book, God and His Name Are Non-Different. And he got ostracized for it because that's not within the, They don't understand it in that way necessarily, all Christian groups. But he had that revelation because God empowered him with that. So therefore, we can understand that anyone in any tradition can develop love. There are these amazing stories. There's one Sufi saint lady, and one day she comes out of her home with two buckets. And in one bucket is full of fire. And in another bucket is full of water. And then she's walking with these two buckets. And then someone stops and says, "What's the meaning of this?" And she says, "With the water, I want to extinguish the flames of hell. And with the fire, I want to burn up the heavens." Why? She said, "Because I want to teach people that religion is not about avoiding hell or about finding enjoyment in the heavens, but religion is about finding love in the here and now." So, wow, that was a profound realization. So it's not so much about our sectarian affiliation, but it's really about love. Even the Bhagavatam says this. Sarve pumsham paro dharmo yato bhakti radhoksaje ahaituki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. The supreme occupation for all living beings is that by which they can attain love for the divine. And that love, if it's unmotivated and uninterrupted, then it will fully satisfy the self. So we may find that other religions, there are very elevated spiritual practitioners who then enter into a relationship of love with the divine, by which they may then begin to get revelations of the divine, which is even beyond what's revealed in that body of knowledge. Because God doesn't look at you and look at your denomination. He looks at you and looks at your heart and your love. At the same time, there may be people in the Krishna conscious tradition who feel like, yeah, we have access to everything. We're the most elevated. But you can have access to all of that knowledge, but if you haven't developed love within your heart, it doesn't mean that you're necessarily so advanced. So I think when we try to make assessments of who will go where and how, it becomes a little problematic, because as soon as there's love, then the divine gets involved and reveals things. Even Krishna says, "Sarvasya chaham ridi sanivishto mata smitir gyanam apohanam cha." Krishna says, "I'm in your heart and I give you knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness." So the divine within the heart can also, Krishna is within everyone's heart. Krishna may start to reveal. I'll even show you this. Nitishekha sent this to me the other day. Just to give you a sense of how. So this is a writing from someone called, this is the vision of Saint Teresa. I think she was a Christian saint and she had some vision of God. This was her vision of God. Christian saint lady. "I saw there in this Elysius, a delicious place where great souls go, a young black man with a strange beauty. On top of his head, he had like a garland that no crown of great quarry, and he had many bridesmaids that walked there with him with bouquets on hands. They were all chanting the praises of God. I was not doing but opening my eyes so I wouldn't be distracted, and I couldn't take my attention away from it." So that's interesting. Ever met a young darkish man with a strange beauty, who on his top of his head has a garland, has a crown, has many bridesmaids that walks there with him, who are all endowed also with many flowers, and who are constantly singing and chanting the praises of God. Sounds familiar. You know what I mean? So that's interesting. That was Saint Teresa from the Christian tradition, who had a vision of God. Who can say? How we know how Krishna will reveal himself. So Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is not a sectarian faith. We're teaching a science of love. And in that way, yeah, it's accessible to everyone. I don't know, does that help? Yeah. I don't know how we're doing for time.
Yeah, we are okay.
We're okay? Sure. Yeah, anyone else have anything they would like to ask? Or question, or comment, or reflection? No?
I have a question.
Okay.
How can we, if life gets so difficult, so many complications, so many things we've got to do, how can we always try and remember Krishna and try and please Him in our actions and serving?
Life gets so difficult, it's so chaotic, and how can we have a remembrance of Krishna, a remembrance of the spiritual journey that we're on, what's our priority in life in the midst of all of that? I think one thing that's on a very practical level that I've seen has been like the cornerstone of my spiritual life, in whatever I've been able to do, is creating a sacred space in your life every single day. You know, once I was traveling in India, and I met this kind of, there was this kind of yogi kind of practitioner, and I asked him, can you give me some advice for my spiritual journey? And he said, every year disconnect for 1 month, every week disconnect for 1 day, and every day disconnect for 1 hour. Disconnect to connect. So that was very interesting. If you want to be able to deal with the madness of this world, you need to take some time every day to disconnect from the world as well. And so I saw in my life that having that sacred space, ideally in the early morning, where you create a time, you create a meditation, and in that time you chant, you read, you focus yourself, you remember that beyond all of the identities and the roles and the responsibilities that I take in this world, I have a bigger purpose, I have a bigger journey that I'm on, and let me remember that journey amidst all the busyness and chaos of life. Then what happens is when you then enter the world, you enter with some kind of spiritual bubble around you, where you're kind of in the world, but not of the world, not affected by it in the same way, not influenced in the same way. So I think that those people who take that time to, number one, prioritize that sacred space and say it doesn't matter how busy life gets, it doesn't matter how many demands there are, this is a space in my life which no one can hijack. Because if I don't have that space in my life, then everything else won't work. You see, when you eat, half, according to Ayurveda, half your stomach should be solids, one quarter should be liquids, and one quarter should be air. That's a warning for the subsequent meal. Why do you need one quarter of space of air? Because if there's no air, if there's no space, you can't digest anything. You won't be able to digest life unless you create some sacred space in which you disconnect from the world. Now you may say, but life is busy. But there's so many responsibilities. I've got kids and sometimes their schedules are also not fixed. How do I do it? Somehow all of us in our own busyness have to find that time. And I think when you do that, then the chaos of the world doesn't affect you in the same way. But when you're running out of the door in the morning, you know, with a piece of toast in your hand, trying to get to work on time, and you're playing catch up from the first moment, then again you'll be pulled into the dogfight of life. And then all of that will drag you down. But if in the very first thing of the day you elevate yourself above the dogfight of the material world and all the chaos and all the madness, then what happens is when you enter all of that, you've elevated yourself beyond that, so you don't get dragged into that in the same way. So yeah, we have to learn to live with chaos. Learn to live with chaos. But you can only live with chaos if you've created a spiritual sacred space of consciousness. And you can only do that if you have that discipline every day. Otherwise, we'll forget our purpose. We'll forget the journey that we're on. All the demands of life will take us over. Does that help? Early to bed, early to rise. Early morning is the best time. Yeah. Anyone else? Otherwise, we can do a little bit of chanting. And then maybe. Yeah? Okay, we'll do a little bit of chanting and finish.